and Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have with us Dr. Michael Gershon, and we're going to be talking about his work with the gut and his correlation with brain, in other words, gut, the second brain. How are you, Dr. Gershon?
I can't grumble. Thank you.
Good deal. So, as you know, I don't have a copy of your book, so if you would just
If you'd bought one.
I couldn't find one. That was the problem.
Okay. Amazon has it.
If you would just tell us a little bit about you and what you do and where people can find you and where people can find your book.
Okay. Well, I can be found in New York City because I'm a professor at Columbia University, which is in New York City, at the medical school. And I deal with the gut because it keeps me off the street. when I looked at the brain as a young neuroscientist, I found it daunting and still do. And I decided I needed a simpler nervous system to work on, which I thought would be the nervous system in the gut. And what I didn't understand is that a simple nervous system is an oxymoron, you know, like jumbo shrimp.
Right. Is your training in?
So my training is in medicine and in pharmacology. I did a postdoctoral fellowship in pharmacology at Oxford in England. So I'm trained in drugs and I'm trained in gut.
Okay. And do you have a website? Wanted to ask a question, where would they find you? What is the name of your book so they can look for it?
So the name of the book is The Second Brain, and it's easily obtainable from Amazon.com. It's been there for years. And the other way they can get in touch with me is to send me emails, which I always answer, which is mdg4@columbia.edu.
So MDP, did you say?
DG, Gershon.
Okay.
He is in George, or girl, or great, if you like.
Okay. So before I get started in my questions, because my interest really lies in human consciousness and mind and brain, but when I saw your book, I talk so many times to people who listen that you are your emotions. And gut plays a huge role in that, so I'd like for you to just tell us a little bit about your book and a little bit about your work and the enteric nervous system and how it connects with brain, and then maybe tell us what comes first, physiology or psychology when it comes to gut.
Okay, well, to begin with, the first realization that I had early on and what attracted me to the gut was that its nervous system is the only part outside the brain and the spinal cord, which is wholly owned by the brain, that can function independently of input from brain or spinal cord. So the gut is an independent nervous system, which is why I called it the second brain, because it can function even when completely cut off from the gut, from the brain. So you cut off all the nervous connections at all so that it just sits on its own and it works fine. And it can even do that in a test tube. So we can admire it as the only part outside the brain of the nervous system that can function independently.
Why do you say gut is second brain?
Well, I called it second because I find the brain daunting, the one in the hat. So I called it second because it's, however complicated it is, it's simpler than the brain. So I called it the second brain. But it functions independently, and it runs the gut. So you can think of it this way. The nervous system of the gut deals with all the complexity of digestion. So the brain doesn't have to get its hands dirty with that sort of thing. And the gut leaves, you know, religion, philosophy, poetry, to the brain and the head. And so the brain and the head functions as a CEO, which doesn't micromanage, can give a few commands out to the gut, go faster, go slower, but it doesn't tell it in detail what to do. That's decided by the nervous system of the gut itself.
Okay. And the reason that it's similar is because it, too, has neurons. Is that right?
Well, you've got a lot of neurons. In fact, more nerve cells in your gut than you do in your spinal cord. It's huge. You have more neurons in the gut than the rest of the peripheral nervous system combined. So it's a large, complex, independent nervous system. And it looks like the brain. Every neurotransmitter, you know, the molecules that talk from one nerve cell to another, the language of nerve cells, every class of neurotransmitter that's present in the brain is present in the gut. There's absolutely nothing like that anywhere outside the brain.
So I'm going to ask you my questions now, and I'm doing the best I can because I'm just a woman. I'm not a scientist, okay? So be easy on me with my questions, but it's the things that make me curious, and I know it makes my listeners curious.
Look, don't be silly. Don't be easy. Just ask your questions. Any question you ask needs a scientific answer.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So what is the role of gut and enteric, autonomic, and central nervous system? What is the interplay there?
That's important to understand. So I've been telling you the gut can work independently of the brain, but it doesn't always do that. Usually it works together. And if you look at the vagus nerve, that's spelled V-A-G-U-S, and it's just Greek for wonder, but it's the nerve that connects the brain and the gut, the big one. And that nerve, 90% of it carries information from the gut to the brain, not from the brain to the gut. So what people hadn't understood for many years is that there's a huge crosstalk between these two nervous centers. And the brain in the gut can influence the brain in the head. And it controls mood. And people have found, and spectacularly, they actually do this now, if you can stimulate the nerves that run from the gut to the brain and use it to treat epilepsy, and you can use it to improve, get rid of depression, and improve learning and memory in both humans and animals. So the gut normally sends signals to the brain that makes the brain function well. And you can mimic those signals therapeutically in people.
So that was one of my questions, actually. Does gut influence memory, and if so, how does it do it?
The answer is yes. It can improve learning, it can improve memory, it can improve mood. And it can make memory, mood, and go south, make it much worse. But you're asking me one last thing. How does it do it? And I could only answer you by saying, what a good question. I can't answer that one yet.
So does the gut process information like brain, or does the gut inform brain that processing is needed?
Nope. The gut can do it all by itself. That's what I mean. It's independent. The only part of the body outside the brain or spinal cord that can pull this off.
Can it
trick?
Does it process information from our surroundings, like, you know, what we see and how we, you know, how we feel with emotions, I guess is what I'm saying.
No, it doesn't do that. What it does is it processes information that it gets from inside your gut. It doesn't have eyes to see. It doesn't have feeling. It doesn't have ears. What it does is it sees what comes down your bowel. But lots come into your gut. Look, everything you take in your mouth goes down your gut.
Okay.
And you've got taste buds in your tongue, and you've got them all the way down the gut.
Okay. And some of my questions to you are probably going to appear redundant, but I want to ask them in this way just so I understand, okay?
Sure.
Does the gut communicate with brain, or does brain communicate with gut? And if so, whatever it is, how does the communication go on? Is it signaling? Is it stochastic resonance? Is it chemicals? What is it?
Okay, so both happen. The brain sends information to the gut, as I told you, like a CEO giving general commands, and the gut decides what then to do, carry it out. But and the gut sends information to the brain, and it goes as signals in nerve cells both ways, and at the end, neurotransmitters are released. So the final signals are all chemical.
Okay. So that brings up this thought for me. I don't know if you know anything about me, but I'm a medical intuitive.
No, I don't know about you, but I know about gut.
I've not always had it. It just came a few years ago. And one of the things when I started doing this that I learned is that, or one of the things I feel or intuited, however you want to say it, linguistics is the problem, is that I tell people a story when they get sick. Do you know how it feels when you look in the rearview mirror and see that blue light of a policeman when they stop you and you get that funny sick feeling in your gut? What is that? Is that neurons firing?
Yes. What that is the gut turning itself into a spasm, and it feels tight inside your body, and you can feel that, and it's
okay.
Not...
When that happens, does the gut then send a message to the brain about what that feeling is? And I'm assuming it's doing it through signals and that the brain will interpret those signals and then release those chemicals. Is that right?
Well, the signals, the nerves that carry the signals release chemicals in the brain, which then releases more. But to appreciate something, the word fear or anxiety, it may be enhanced by your gut, but you can't feel that except in the brain. Anything that comes to consciousness at all is brain.
Okay. Does it go through your autonomic nervous system? Is that how it gets the brain?
Nope. There's a nerve that goes direct gut-brain. So there's a gut-brain axis. The rest of the autonomic nervous system is a passive bystander.
Okay. So when you have this gut feeling, I don't ever recall having a gut feeling like that when I'm having a positive emotion, only when I'm having negative emotions. Does that make any sense to you?
Sure it does. One reason it does is that the gut is a powerful teacher. You know, as a professor, I admire it. So let me tell you, watch that dog operate on the streets of New York, you know that something's got to teach that animal better than I can what not to eat. And his gut teaches him. Eats the wrong thing, he's miserable for hours and hours, and he knows it, and he knows what made him miserable. It was that stupid thing he ate, and he learns not to do it again. So the gut is a great signaler of unpleasant feelings. In fact, the nervous system of the gut is something you want to have operate in deep, deep, deep background. You really don't want the gut to come to consciousness. Everything that comes that you understand from the gut is negative.
So how do you control that?
Well, some people control it and some don't. The only way to control it is to learn to control it and to learn which signals to pay attention to and which to ignore. And when you get a bad signal and you have to ignore it, you better had. Otherwise, you get irritable bowel syndrome or something like that, functional bowel disease, and it's extremely painful.
Okay, I'm going to go back to emotions, and I know I've asked this question in a different way, but I want to ask it this way again, too. What is the relationship between gut and emotions? Depression, serotonin, dopamine, is there a connection there?
Sure. So as I told you, the nervous system of the gut can influence the way the brain feels emotions. But the gut has a lot of serotonin in it. The gut is the largest concentrate. Hold on just 1 minute.
Okay.
Now, Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was asking about the relationship between gut and emotions, like, and the neurotransmitters serotonin, norepinephrine.
So the gut is the largest source of serotonin in the body. The gut makes 95% of the body's serotonin. Brain has only 2 to 3%. Now, that 2 to 3% is very important. I mean, I like to think that the serotonin of the brain is critical for everything that makes life worthwhile, you know, sex, sleeping, dreaming, eating, appetite, mood, countering depression, happiness, that all involves serotonin. But the gut has more of it. And the serotonin in the gut, however, is not so happiness. It doesn't go to the brain, but it works directly in the gut, and it causes nausea and pain. So one way to deal with serotonin is to block its action in the gut, which is useful in cancer chemotherapy, for example. It stops nausea.
Okay, we're going to get into the irritable bowel syndrome and things like that in a few minutes. I'm just so interested in this brain-gut thing. It intrigues me so. So if you have too much serotonin floating around in your gut, does that mean the brain's being deprived?
No, not at all, because serotonin doesn't go across the blood-brain barrier at all. So the gut makes its own serotonin, the brain makes its serotonin, and there's no connection between the two. They each make their own. And serotonin does one set of things in the gut and another set of things in the brain.
What if you have leaky gut syndrome and it's leaking out through your gut? Does it cross the blood-brain barrier then?
Nope. And leaky gut syndrome has a very bad reputation. Probably does not exist.
What do you mean?
Well, people think of leaky gut that you make bad things in the lumen of the gut and it leaks in. And probably that doesn't happen very much, if at all.
So if your gut is compacted with feces that hasn't been cleaned out or because of a bad diet, it doesn't stretch out the colon and it doesn't leak out?
It stretches out the colon, but it doesn't leak. No, it can leak out your anus and make you incontinent, and that's real bad. You know, that's
okay.
Like incompatible with civilization if the gut leaks out the anus. But leak into the body doesn't happen very much.
Okay, so now I have to ask you, if so many doctors are out there saying that, why are they saying it if it's not true?
Not about
the serotonin, but about leaky gut.
Well, one thing that was said, for example, is that if you get vaccinated against measles, mumps, and rubella, that it causes leaky gut syndrome and forbidden peptides are made in the gut and leak into the body and cause autism. And that turned out to be totally wrong and said by a charlatan, and there's no evidence for it at all, and tons of evidence against it, and it's dead wrong. So leaky gut mainly doesn't happen. When it happens, and it can happen rarely during immune responses in the gut, mainly the problem is not that toxins leak into the body, but the body's proteins leak out and they get into the gut, because the inside of the gut is actually outside the body. You know, in a sense, T.S. Eliot was right, we're hollow men and women. Actually, T.S. Eliot said we're hollow men, but, you know, he was a male chauvinist. It's hollow men and women. But in any case, you leak out and that you blow up like a balloon. It's terrible. But that's rare.
But a lot of people
have a one-way leak in. Doesn't happen.
Okay, then I'm going to ask you this. A lot of people are having bloating now, more so probably than any other time that I've ever known. Is it digestion problems with maybe genetically modified foods? Is it candida filling up? Or what is causing all of that bloating in the gut?
Much of it is irritable bowel syndrome. And we don't know 100% of what that happens. One thing that I believe is that it's a combination of the environment affecting the nervous system, which leads to long-term changes in the nervous system of the gut, and the gut's brain and the brain in the head don't communicate properly. And so the gut doesn't work right, and you get this feeling of bloating. And when you get the feeling of bloating, many people actually, if you measure it, are full of gas, and it's internal gas made in the gut. But it has to do with inadequate motility. It's not working right, and people feel badly because the perception from the gut is bad, and all those negative things I was talking about are more readily perceived. All of that leads to it. But it doesn't have to do with leakiness from the gut.
Okay. If you do you recommend doing colon cleanses and things such as that?
Not at all. Not at all. I think that's very dangerous.
Why
you
that?
Do that colon cleansing stuff, and more likely you're going to cause electrolyte, that is salt imbalance in the body, than you are going to clean anything out useful out of the body. There's no evidence, none, zero, dead zero, that that's useful.
Okay. What do you recommend, probiotics or enzymes?
That's different. Probiotics, yes. Probiotics, so you've got tons of bacteria. You have 100 times more bacterial cells in you, carrying on you, than you own cells of your own. So in a sense, we're just a platform to carry bacteria around. That's what we do. Bacteria have lived with us, and they know they've got a good thing going for them. And the reason, 500 species or more of them are potentially lethal. And the reason we live with them is they fight each other off, but in addition, we have a great nervous system and a great immune system that keeps them out. Now, if you eat probiotics, it's possible to change the balance of bacteria and fill up your gut with good guys and keep down the bad guys. So eating probiotics can be a good thing. Much of it's misused because most of the probiotics that people eat, like if you go out and just get a container of yogurt, your stomach will kill off the bacteria, so it doesn't matter how much you eat, you don't get any probiotics. But there are some that can make it. And some food companies actually have gone to a lot of effort to find which ones can do good.
I was thinking more like those multiple-strain probiotics that have, you know, billions.
Well, they've got billions of bacteria, but many of them don't know what's in there or whether they survive. So the in your gut. So the ones that do, for example, Activia from Danon, and full disclosure, I want you to know that I have consulted for Danon. Danon yogurt makes Activia, and that actually has clinical evidence to work.
Okay, now my question is, if we're going to talk about yogurts and probiotics, when they're pasteurized, does it not kill them or radiate it or whatever it is they do to those kinds of foods?
Well, no. What they do, pasteurize the stuff, then put the probiotic in. They don't kill the probiotic.
Oh, okay, so they do it first.
Yeah, and what you want to do is make sure you don't have tuberculosis in it. That's another thing you can get through
How
milk.
How do you know that?
Pardon me?
How will you know that?
Well, you pasteurize it, and that's the end of it. That's why you pasteurize things, because in some countries in Europe, like France, they test that cow by cow to make sure everything's okay so you can have non-pasteurized milk. But in our country, we just pasteurize everything and kill off brucellosis and tuberculosis. You don't want to get those.
Okay.
So pasteurization's a good thing.
So what comes first when it comes to the gut and the brain, physiology or psychology?
That's what comes first, the chicken or the egg?
Okay. So that's a hard question to answer, and know that it's really
And so physiology and psychology, I mean, look, you have the nervous system can affect its everything, including what nerve cells develop. So if you have bad psychological influence, for example, and stress the gut early in life, you can permanently change the gut. So what does that mean? It means that the gut can stress you psychologically, and psychologically you can stress the gut. Which comes first? How do I know?
Okay.
Depends on who's screwing up first.
I gotcha. So if the gut and brain have many of the same attributes, what differentiates them?
Where they are. One's in the head. It's connected to do its thing. One's in the bowel. It does its thing.
Can you give us more detail about that? Is it consciousness that makes the two the difference?
Well, consciousness.
And what is consciousness to you? First of all, what is consciousness?
Well,
what's
consciousness.
The definition of that?
Consciousness is a question that philosophers have been dealing with since Aristotle. So, I mean, asking me what is consciousness is puts me in a tough spot. What we know about consciousness is just simply that it involves the activity of a part of the brain called the cerebral cortex. And that's the only part of the nervous system that I know of that leads to consciousness. What the thing is doing up there that exactly makes for consciousness is a bit beyond me.
Okay.
But, on the other hand, so that's consciousness, and that's that part of the brain. The gut, as I told you, deals with the details of digestion, the details of secretion, figuring out how to get your food to go through, processed, mixed, digested, so you can absorb nutrients. That's what the gut is all about, and its nervous system. It can also punish you for eating the wrong stuff, and that hurts, and it feels bad, and you become nauseated, which is an intolerable feeling.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
So it communicates with the brain. If you're anxious and stressed, for example, when I call the NIH, National Institutes of Health, to see how my latest grant application is done, I become painfully aware of the kind of effect the brain can have on the gut.
I can understand that.
So it works both ways. It's a two-way communication, and each system can make the other better. Each system, the brain, can make the gut work better by telling it more, less. I mean, for example, if you're at war and a whole bunch of Taliban are coming running at you, it's a bad moment for your gut to be telling it now's the moment it wants to defecate. Right? You want it to shut down under those kind of conditions. On the other hand, if your brain is just for reasons that are hard to point to, getting the feeling that it's under siege and it tells the gut to shut down or to go into high gear at an inappropriate moment, it feels very bad. So the brain can disturb the gut or help the gut. Similarly, the gut can disturb or help the brain. It works both ways. Two systems communicate, there's bliss in the body. Two systems work badly together, it's hell to pay.
Okay, and again, I'm going to just ask kind of the same question in a different way just because it interests me, okay? So please forgive me. Does the gut have any self-sensate or cognitive function?
No.
Okay.
The brain deals anything that comes to consciousness. Religion, poetry, philosophy, God help us, politics, it's all in the head.
Okay, and it doesn't have any self-awareness either, right?
No.
Okay.
What the gut can do is influence your mood, right? It can make you feel better, make you feel worse, but it's not got any feeling of consciousness. You have a gut sensation, the sensation is in the head, and it's referred to the gut.
Okay. So one thing I was curious about, I have a an autonomic nervous system disorder, and it bothers me a lot. I mean, it makes me, you know, I was telling you before we got on the air that I feel shaky on the inside when I get stressed out. Is that mind or is that gut?
Mind.
That's mind. Okay.
Yeah. And but the gut can contribute to it if the mind is making the gut turn into spasms, so you can feel it from the gut.
Okay. Does the gut play any role in addiction?
Addiction?
Yes.
Yes, it does. You can addict the gut. In fact, you can addict the gut to opiates even in vitro, that is, in a test tube. So if you take a piece of guinea pig gut out of the guinea pig and mount it in physiological solution, it's happy, it lasts, thinks it's doing fine. You add opiates, and at first the contractions when you stimulate the nervous system go down, and then it gets used to the opiates, and they come back up. And then if you take the opiate out of the bath, the gut doesn't work anymore. It needs it. So you can addict a piece of gut, even in vitro, over the course of, say, 2 to 3 hours. I've seen that done. And people get very addicted. The gut is very addicted to opiates in narcotics addicts.
So I think I saw somewhere that the gut makes benzodiazepines. Is that correct?
Yes, it does, but it makes an endogenous compound that acts like a benzodiazepine, and it also makes endogenous compounds that act like heroin.
So what does that mean to us? I don't really, to a layperson, what are you saying?
What I'm saying is that those kinds of things are also made in the brain, and the gut has a lot of sophistication in what it does, and it's got its own calming factors, such as these opiate-like stuff or benzodiazepine-like stuff, and it's got activating factors like serotonin. And it uses them to do its thing right. And we don't understand yet how they all play out with one another in the function of the gut. But we know that they're all there and necessary.
Okay. Well, moving back to addiction, does the gut play any role in our traditional understanding of, like, alcoholics and drug addicts? Or is that something different?
Well, alcohol, no. Drug addict, yes. As I told you, if you get addicted to an opiate, like heroin, morphine, the gut gets as addicted as the brain.
And
we have no evidence
that
that's addicted to alcohol.
Is that, as if you get addicted like that, let's just say somebody's taking street drugs. Their mind gets addicted and their gut gets addicted, right?
Both, right.
So you have to detox them both, I guess, then.
Exactly. And
how
if
do you detox the gut?
Well, if you don't do it separately, you do it together because you can't, it's hard to take the opiates out of the gut and not the brain. So what you do is you deny the opiates to the body and detox the body, and ultimately the brain at first requires the opiates and gets very upset when they're not there, and similarly the gut requires opiates, and it turns itself into knots, hurts, doesn't work, until eventually gets used to it, that they're not there. So, yes, you can addict both. They affect both. You got to get rid of both. For both.
How would you balance the enteric nervous system, autonomic nervous system, or central nervous system? How would you balance it out and get it back normal without using pharmaceuticals? Or can you do that?
Well, what you do is, first of all, it's very hard without using pharmaceuticals to treat the gut. You can take probiotics, helps a bit. You eat a nice, healthy diet, helps a bit, but you can't do a lot. What you can do with the gut is treat it, or you used to be able to, with some pharmaceuticals, but they're both the ones that all the pharmaceuticals that used to work very well for the gut are pretty much off the market. There's one
That's
on
what?
Now restricted use, but basically they're no good drugs. The brain you can deal with psychologically because it's amenable to psychotherapy. And you can hope that if you've got the brain settling down, the rest of the autonomic nervous system and the gut may improve.
So would it, if you have problems with your gut, would it benefit to take 5-HTP or something like that?
No, not 5-HTP. That's kind of dangerous. I wouldn't go that route. But there used to be a drug from Novartis called Tegaserod or Zelnorm, which was very helpful for constipation, and a drug from GlaxoSmithKline called Alocitron or Lotrinex, which was very helpful for diarrhea predominant IBS. But those drugs were removed by the FDA from the market. Alocitron, Lotrinex, is back, sold by Prometheus in limited quantity.
And what would those pharmaceuticals do? How would they treat?
They work on serotonin in the gut. One gives more serotonin action, and that relieves constipation, and one blocks the effect of serotonin in sending noxious signals to the brain. And that's Alocitron. Neither of those drugs are widely available now.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
And so there really is not a lot you can do. The Food and Drug Administration said IBS now should be treated conservatively and with standard therapy. And that's another way of saying with things that don't work.
Okay, I'm going to put you on the spot here. And if you don't know, that's okay.
I probably won't. But
doesn't feel comfortable, that's okay too. We weren't made up with laboratory pharmaceuticals. So it seems to me that pharmaceuticals are always trying to mimic some kind of natural substance. What would those drugs be trying to mimic?
Well, one thing you have to understand, let me tell you a little bit about serotonin, and you'll understand something about pharmacology. So serotonin has, depending how you look at it, some 17 different receptors that respond to serotonin. Receptors are detectors, like ears, that respond to sound.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got 17 different molecules, at least, in the body that can detect and respond to serotonin. But they do all kinds of different things. So if you just put serotonin in the body and slosh it around, you get tons of effects, and you don't know what you're dealing with, and it's not helpful. In fact, it's toxic. But if you can stimulate one of those receptors or block one of those receptors with a drug, you can alter the natural pharmaceutical, the natural compound, and get a really beneficial effect. And so the idea in pharmacology is to act selectively on just a few things. So not just take a raw natural substance and do everything, but just hit parts of it that do the right thing. For example, serotonin does all those things, but nerves don't just slosh serotonin around the body. They add it to one right spot. And if you've lost the nerve that adds it to the right spot, you can restore it by just stimulating one of the right receptors. So that's the goal of pharmacology, and that was the goal of Tegaserod, which stimulated just one of the many kinds of serotonin receptor. So it was a good thing.
Okay.
But unfortunately, you know, when you take a drug, it doesn't just go to the gut. It goes elsewhere. And people worried that where else it was going might have been toxic. And so with every drug, every food, with every substance you take into the body, even water can be toxic. So you have to take everything you take into you, it's a guess as to whether it's going to be good or bad.
Okay.
You can take too much.
I'm going to ask you one more question. It's a quarter till the hour now. But I'm going to ask you one more question, and then I want you to talk about what you want to talk about, okay?
Okay.
That we haven't already covered. We know that there are certain things that are brain foods, such as omega oils and lecithin. Would those same things support the gut, or if not, are there any other nutrients that we would use to support the gut other than the probiotics we've already talked about?
Well, probiotics, and a good thing for the gut is usually fiber. It gives the gut something to chew on. It doesn't digest, it's just filler, so that it goes through. It's a good thing. But for the most part, the kinds of things that are beneficial for the whole body are beneficial for the gut.
Okay. Now, what? Let's talk about your work in general. Do you have anything in specific that you would like to talk about?
Well, what I'm working on at the moment is to try to understand how the gut develops and how the nervous system of the gut develops and how they get this incredible sophistication that I've just described for you during development. I mean, the rules that govern the regular banal ganglia or nerve cells elsewhere in the body don't work for the enteric nervous system because it's like the brain. And I'd love to understand how these develop, and I don't want to understand just the genes that control yes, no, there is one or isn't one. I want to know what makes for the various types of neuron, how they control that, and how early influence in childhood can lead to lasting changes in the nervous system later on, so we can understand not rare disease with strange genetic defects, but common disorders like IBS, functional dyspepsia, the kinds of things that plague 20% of America. And I honestly think it all can be understood through development of this system. And in terms of the adult gut, the most recent thing I've been working on is this finding, is a finding that there are stem cells able to replace nerve cells even in adults. And I'm looking for ways to mobilize those stem cells so that we can get them to fix the gut in old folks like me when the gut goes bad.
So do you... go ahead.
Be a good thing if you could take a pill and make a new nerve cell, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So do you get the body to stimulate its own stem cells, or do you inject them, or how do you get it?
No. I'm talking about let the body make it. It's got its own, and I want to mobilize them into action.
And are you becoming successful? Have you found any success there?
Having a little, yes.
Tell me about it.
Well, we got a mouse, and we have found that if we use just the right serotonin receptor stimulant, we can turn them on. And now we're looking for natural things in the body behaviors that can turn them on and get them working, make the nerve cells, and cure illnesses or problems the body has, the trauma.
I'm curious, have you had to develop IBS yourself in order to learn how to fix it?
No. God has been good to me, left my bowel alone. I don't have that.
That's a good thing.
Yes, it is a very good thing.
So you talk about somewhere I saw a story that you were doing in the Army where involving a sergeant or somebody that was a sergeant that was giving these patients maybe serotonin or something, and then he stopped doing it, and they found out they were all having bowel movements at the same time when he stopped.
And this was an anecdote. It was not something I did personally, but there was an old master sergeant who was very obsessive compulsive, and he had a whole ward of patients who were paraplegic, and they couldn't control their anal sphincter, so they were getting compacted. And so in order to clear that, he would give them enemas. And because he was obsessive compulsive, he gave them at 10 a.m. every day. So the entire ward got enemas pretty much the same time. And then when he rotated off, patients were found still to be defecating, even without the enemas, at the same time. So it looked like the gut had been trained. But
it
that's an anecdote. It's not a real study, and we don't know how that worked.
But it sounds like the gut learns.
It does, but we don't know that that's right. Except that it is true that one thing of learning is if you send impulses into nerve cells in the brain, you sensitize it, and there's long-term potentiation of synaptic transmission, it's called. And that occurs in the gut as well as in the brain. So in that sense, the gut does learn, and it looks like what we associated as the nerve cell equivalent of memory exists in the gut, but it's not been studied beyond that. And to say that you can really get the gut to learn something is further than I would go.
Okay. One other question. This was one of those that's kind of out there, okay? We know that people get gut instincts, and it doesn't have anything to do with food. It has to do with when they're presented with something, they have a gut instinct that it's the right thing or the wrong thing. What comment do you have about that?
Well, it's the brain in action in the head. And it's being their feeling of a gut instinct, it's being referred to the gut. And it may be involved with a feeling of contraction in the gut that makes them feel that way. But as I said before, the gut isn't feeling it. The person's feeling it in the head. Anything you feel, you have an instinct, you have a thought, you have a consciousness, you have you have a dream. It's your head.
Okay.
The gut.
Let's see. I have two questions. One, I'm going to say them quickly. One is, and you can wait till I finish if you don't mind. One is, are the neurons in the gut different from the neurons in the brain? Or are they exactly the same? And shoot, I've lost my second one.
Well, they look the same, they act the same, and they have the same kind of transmitters.
Okay. Oh, I can't remember my other question now. Shoot. All right. Is there anything else that you want to tell us about your work that we haven't already talked about?
Oh, I think I've done it. I'm happy.
Good. I'm happy too then. I think your work's great. I mean, I think you're onto something and it's important. And I thank you for doing it.
Thank you very much.
I think it's really good. So hold on. Let me see if I can just remember my other question. Does the gut and the ENT system affect other bodily organs or systems like heart disease, cancer, or things like that?
Well, it certainly affects cancer because the gut gets lots of cancer. Cancer of the colon is one of the most common. But the nervous system of the gut controls the behavior of pancreas and gallbladder. But other than that, it doesn't.
Okay. So it doesn't, it's not giving, people aren't getting colon polyps because their gut's dirty?
No.
Why are they getting colon polyps?
They got bad genes.
Okay. All right. I wish I could remember that other question. It's so frustrating. Oh, well. All right. Tell us again where to find you.
So I'm at Columbia. mdg4@columbia.edu, and it's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Dr. Gershon, and I appreciate your taking the time to come on my show.
Right, you're welcome. Bye.
Hi, this is Elliot Dasher, author of Integral Health.
Integral Health.
You can hear me and others speaking about consciousness and health.
Just
tune in every Sunday evening at 7 p.m.
7 p.m.
to Infinite Consciousness with Eva Hare.